G'day guys, and welcome to the Infomoto studio. We're back with another podcast. We got Spanner Man. How you going, boys?
G'day, Spence.
Very well, nice thanks, Spence. See you. Yep, nice to see you.
I just used the fancy red button on the desk and it made a jingle song, yeah. So
a jingle song?
Yeah, a jingle song.
Technical, Grant. Spencer likes to get technical.
Yeah, I can't wait to actually hear this when it's finished, I mean.
It'll sound like a Rinso ad with old people on it. Maybe an incontinence pad ad.
We're not that old.
No, I'm not. Yep. Anyway, Spencer, you introduced us?
Yeah, I introduced you.
Thanks, mate. Well, that's out of the way. Hello, Grant. Nice to see you.
Yeah, Greg. Been a while, hasn't it?
Look, a lot's happened.
Yeah, too much to cover in just the short period of this this particular.
Joe Biden's speech, Joe Biden and Trump. Did you watch that?
Yes, I did.
They're not too happy with Joe, are they?
No, except that the problem is that you can't make a decision about who's going to be the best president of the US on the basis of one speech. I mean, the fact is Biden has a team of experts.
Who set him off, but he's going to go
well,
with
no,
it.
No, he has. He doesn't make all those decisions.
You're still an old commo, aren't you?
Yes.
See the thing on the board that says, don't mention the war?
Don't mention the war. just one bad speech doesn't mean the end of the presidency.
No, look, I know. I don't care.
And look at the alternative.
It's for me, it's like watching Cirque du Soleil. It's just colour and movement at this point. Who cares? The free world's, about to fall into a big ditch. And I'm sitting here in Baldwin quite happy with it all.
Well, what happened in France?
What happened in France? Le Pen.
Well, the left's done well.
Well, yeah, but they ganged up on her, didn't
they? Well, yeah. Of course.
I like that.
It's politics.
It's such a French way. If it goes a way that it doesn't work, we can always gang up on you and piss you off anyway.
Yeah, that's probably
true. It's a good political system.
But remember what happened with Brexit? No one thought that would get up, and then suddenly everyone thought, oh, God, we've done it. We've left the EU. And they've regretted it ever since.
Rishi Sunak?
Richie's
gone. Anyway, look, how did we end up in politics?
Oh, sorry.
There's much more interesting things. There's motorcycling to talk about. Infomoto's had a great 6 months or so. Haven't seen you for 6 months. Spencer, 6 months, is it, since we've seen Grant?
Coincidence.
Lazy bugger. What have you been up to?
Well, I've been around.
This
podcast is, in fact, the official world launch of my new book.
Can you look at me? You're looking straight ahead like a school teacher. It's upsetting me.
Hang on, I'll press another button.
What did we get?
Standing ovation.
It was only a matter of time, wasn't it?
Great, yeah.
Where do you get the standing bit? That's audio.
Huh?
How do you know they're standing?
You can tell.
Oh, you can tell. Right. Okay. Yeah, Helen Keller over there doing
They clap differently when they're standing.
You do, though.
Well, your popcorn spills.
Frankly, I think I deserve it.
What?
A standing ovation. Christ. Writing a book is not easy.
Hang on, I'll run it again. All right, settle down.
Right, calm down. Now, you're jumping ahead now.
Am I? Okay.
You are now a published author and you have a book in the marketplace called Ultimate Motorcycle Tours. I've had a look at the book and it is a seriously enjoyable book. Tell us all about it, Grant.
It started with the publisher, Hardy Grant, getting in touch saying, are you interested in writing a book on the 20 best rides in the world? And I've probably done 10 of the 20 that I could think of off the top of my head. And I thought, they're going to pay me to do the other 10. Mm. It sounds like a good deal. Mm. So I agree.
There was a flaw in your business model right there. But anyway,
All right. This was the flaw. 20 minutes after I signed the contract, COVID struck. So can't travel. Can't do any first-hand research. So the book was publication date was put off for a couple of years. But Hardy Grant was keen to get the book out because you're not going to believe this, but there's nothing else like it available. And
it's been very good at keeping my back door open.
Yeah, well, I think
it's
Spencer
very
uses,
handy. It's a nice thickness for that. But anyway, go on.
Spencer uses his copy to put under the side stand of his bike.
But the bloody side stands are too short on those.
I know. I'm glad the book's serving some useful purpose.
I actually hope you do an addendum because mine's just a little bit short. If you just bullshit on a bit longer in the next one.
Do you remember when I was the editor of Royal Auto and I changed...
Amazingly,
the,
I do.
Yeah, I changed the size of the magazine from A3 to A4.
Yes.
And we printed a million copies a month of that magazine.
Yes.
And I only got one letter, and it was from a farmer who said he was upset with the change because he used to be able to fit two pairs of gum boots at the back door on the old Royal Auto, and now he can only fit one. That was the only letter I got.
There's about something
a major
something
change.
Nice about the utility of all that.
Well, maybe, yeah.
It was a good magazine, Royal Auto. I used to enjoy Royal Auto.
Yes. Well, it's like
times were simpler.
Like a lot of print, it's no longer with us.
Unfortunately, print's gone the way of the blacksmith.
And the what was the shit carter?
The shit carter, yeah.
We were having a conversation off air about expressions that aren't used anymore, and one of them is as flat as a shit carter's hat.
Yes.
And you pointed out that most people wouldn't understand what you're
wouldn't
talking
understand.
About. Yeah.
That's the problem with this generation.
Yeah, it is too.
Yeah.
Luckily, they can't buy a house and we fucked the planet for them.
All right. Look, back to
no
the
politics.
No, sorry.
Back to the book. So initially what they wanted was the 20 best rides in the world. So right. How do you fellas feel about making a decision on what the best 20 rides in the world would be?
Well, it'd be hard because there's a lot of rides in the world, isn't there?
There sure are.
It seems like on paper you could come up with it, but the more you'd think about it, the more difficult it would become.
Yeah. What about this ride? What about that ride?
Mm.
So we pretty quickly got onto changing that to 20 great rides of yes. the world, because there's thousands of them, and you can pick 20.
Well, it's always going to be subjective, and people should accept that, you know. But I get what you're saying.
Well, just have a go at picking three, Greg.
Well, I wouldn't know.
The
Garden Route in South Africa, I would say. The Garden Road out of Cape Town.
You've ridden this?
I have.
Yeah, good.
I would say the Grossglockner Pass in Austria.
Austria, yeah.
And probably the Gillies Highway in Cairns.
Okay.
That'd be my three.
The third.
But that's only because I had a good time in all of them.
Yeah, I know. But the third one you chose then, it doesn't register with most motorcyclists.
No, it wouldn't. Wouldn't have ever heard of it.
Do. Don't they? Because they're a bit iconic.
Yes.
Spence, your three?
Well, I mean, with the publisher hat on, I would definitely go for things that are recognisable, like iconic. So Mulholland yep. Highway, Stelvio. And
yep.
But I know what you're going to say, that they're not necessarily the best riding roads, but you know, you could pick hairs at it all day, couldn't you?
Oh, look, if you knew what I was going to say, why did you invite me down?
Because we've already had this podcast.
Oh, have we? Yeah. Okay. All right.
Grant, if I didn't invite you anywhere where I hadn't heard what you've said in the past, we would never meet again.
All right, hang on. So 20 great rides. We had to do what you've just done, which is say, all right, what are the rides that are iconic, that people would expect to see in a book like this, and that are talked about in their riding circles and that are on their wish list to do. So yes. There are rides in this book among the 20. There's actually 25. My maths wasn't very good. But
no wonder it took so long.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but there are rides in here that are included because people would expect them to be there. But you have to wonder, are they the best rides? Now, I know we have talked about this, but we're recording this fairly close to the Great Ocean Road, which is one of the rides in the book. But I have to say, the Great Ocean Road is not a great ride.
No, it's
these
not.
Days.
Well, it's 80 kilometres an hour signposted. And
there's rocks all over it now too.
Yeah, and there's tourist buses everywhere.
Yep, it's very busy. It's slow most of the time. There are patches when you can find a good time to ride it. But a great ride?
No, probably not. Depends what your parameters are.
Well, why does everybody in the rest of the world think it's a great ride?
Oh, because it used to be.
Well, it did used to be, didn't it? It was.
You could go bloody nuts.
It would have been a wonderful ride maybe 40 years ago.
Mm. But always
but if you came from another country, though, and you rode up and those... apostles revealed themselves in the way that they do and the sun hits just right, I can see you coming away from that going, that was a great ride. I mean, we're used to it. It's in our backyard, isn't it? It's
remarkably scenic.
Yeah, and that's a big part of motorcycling, no?
Again, it depends what you want to do. But it's still I still ride it whenever I can. I still get a kick out of it.
Yeah.
I just don't ride it fast anymore.
But Spanner Man, no matter what you put in that book, there's going to be some guy that goes, hang on, I know a better road here and here. You can't win.
Yeah, well, that's why you changed the title from the 20 best rides to 20 great rides, because it allows for people to say, oh, you should have included that or you shouldn't have included that. But it also allows, if this book becomes a major bestseller and is turned into a movie.
Now, relax.
What, you don't think? Well, I've already cast it.
Yeah, who's the lead?
Well, Brad Pitt's playing me.
Yeah.
You got Brad.
Bela Lugosi is playing you.
Right. I'd bring
he's
a
dead. Well, bring that won't make any difference.
I'd bring a reference out of the 30s if I were you, Grant. Because there's not that many people going to know who Bela Lugosi is.
Yes, all right. So
maybe you'd say Roseanne Barr.
Yeah, if the book is a good seller, there's a fair chance the publishing company will say, well, what about 20 more great rides?
Yeah, yeah. Would you do it again, though? Because I found you despicably unavailable during it. Your marriage was almost over.
Yep.
Whenever I rang you to do something, you said, oh, I can't. I've got this book to write. Yeah, I'll be there in an hour.
Yeah, but look, it's the Greg Leach method acting writing gig in which
get your son
I get
to do
4 years to do it, and I do it in the last 6 weeks.
Yes.
So, yeah. I was pretty busy.
I do
busy.
Recognize that.
I was pretty busy towards the end there. So my apologies.
There's a lot of words in there, Spider-Man. I didn't think it was going to be so capacious.
Most of them make sense too.
Yeah, well, most of them, yeah.
It's a good book. And look, it's available in all good bookshops and quite a few shady ones.
Yeah, and online.
Online.
Yeah.
Where do you get it from?
Well, Booktopia took it and then went bankrupt almost immediately.
Did they? Do you think there's a correlation?
Yes, I'm sure there is. But don't...
they ordered 1 million units. This is it, boys.
But Amazon have got it.
Hit the big time here.
But most bookshops will have it.
It's a good read. Honestly, it's a good read. It's in my dunny.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a disparaging fashion. I can sit down and read a bit, pick it up wherever I like. It's transportable. It's not
that's right.
Heavy reading. And there's a lot of good insight in there.
Well, I hope so.
For a man of limited ability, you've done very well.
It is a really good thing.
It's a great book.
Taking the piss. And the imagery came out real nice. What kind of stock is that? It's not fully matte, but it's sort of matte.
Yeah, it's sort of matte, and it's quite thick too.
It's Demai Quarto.
It looks...
Is it?
I don't know. I'm making
you're probably a guy that would know.
I do know. But
you're making
it. No one cares.
Like I did with most of the distances in the book.
Yeah, I'm the blacksmith of the new millennium.
Yeah. There's a clue on the back cover where it's got the little barcode and price tag. The prices are in US dollars and UK pounds.
How much is it?
35 US.
What?
35 bucks.
How many? US. You get four or five books for that?
No,
you?
No.
Oh, just the one? Right.
That's okay. How good this book is.
Oh, sorry.
And 23 quid in the UK. But the fact that it doesn't have, for example, an Australian price indicates where they think it's going to sell. So it's an international.
Well, you would have had to meet those parameters, Grant, and I imagine that like it's all very well to say, let's write a book about the 20 ultimate rides, but you've got to meet parameters when you write a book, yeah?
Yeah, that's right.
And those are part, you know, where are we selling the book? What's the language going to it? How does it appeal to a certain demographic? In other words, you sort of lose all your personality and just write a blando old bucket of shit.
What you've inadvertently done there is brought up the issue of artificial intelligence.
No, we're not going down that road, are we?
Yeah. Artificial intelligence.
We are going to go down
that
road.
We're
going
to get to the bottom of that, are we?
Oh, no, God.
Well, what the publishing company is trying to do with this book, I mean, what happened was they said, send us a couple of chapters so they could have a look at it. And the response was, yeah, it's good, but we'd like more of your personality.
We'd like it gooder.
We'd like more of your personality. We don't just...
Careful what you wish for.
Jesus. Well, it's exactly what I told them. You know, like I'm an aging, heavy-drinking communist. And You know, is that the kind of personality you want reflected in the stories?
Only three of the adjectives I would have come up with.
Well, there's more.
Obviously. There are others.
Yeah, that's right. But we compromised a bit, and I introduced this section of each of the rides, a thing called Being There, which was an anecdote that came from the ride that you wouldn't include in the book, but shows that some living human being was actually there and something, you know, things happened.
Yes.
And it's a way of...
Personality.
Yeah. At the moment, AI wouldn't be very good at that sort of abstracting.
No.
That I did for the Being There stuff.
No. Now,
I think it's going to get better, though. I'd be very surprised if in, you know, 5 years' time it can't do it.
Well, we'll just say write us a book about 20 ultimate rides in the style of Grant Roth.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure this book's already
There'll be a few stains on it.
Just meet the deadline.
It'll be late. Got there before me.
Yeah, just right. Yeah.
Got there before me. We're queuing them up, Grant. Well, yeah, you're quite right. But are you seriously bothered by that, or do we – and I'm not sure what the right answer – if there is a right answer to this, but I'm not anywhere near as frightened of it as I hear some people.
No.
I've only got about 10 years left. So.
It's going to be quite useful for a lot of people, but it can be pretty confusing as well. While I was writing this, one of my more intelligent children was visiting and said, give me a destination. Used, you know, one of the very available AI apps that's around. Mm. And he asked me, you know, who do you want? What style do you want for this? Give me the name of a writer. And I used Hunter S. Thompson. And he turned out 1,000 words that looked like they'd been written by Hunter S. Thompson about the destination.
Yeah.
Now, was it better than the stuff I was writing, that I was labouring over, that I was carving into stone? Mm.
It's impossible to have an objective view of that.
Yeah, that's right. But it's also possible, though, that a publishing company could produce a book like this without an author.
Oh, and do you think
it's
a publishing
100% happening everywhere constantly? And within 1 year, 2 years, a bit of text or a video will be completely indistinguishable from the real thing unless you are an absolute expert in the topic. What will need to happen is there needs to be a concrete labelling system for things that use AI and don't, because the eye will never be good enough.
I've got that feeling too, that if we could possibly, I don't know how it would work, I have no idea, it's a nascent idea, but where if there was some type of system of like a stamp from a university or a highly respected academic.
Well, it would be like a blockchain thing, you know. Anyway, what are we talking about?
I don't know. Anyway, I'm bored.
Since just
imagine the poor bastards listening.
Just to finish up,
they've gone to sleep and run off the road.
What's happening at unis at the moment is that students can buy essays that are created by AI, and they're guaranteed not to be picked up as plagiarism by the app that the university uses to detect it.
Jeez, I hope they don't run some of your copy through that over the years.
My copy will be there. This book will have been digitized.
No, but the copy over the years, I just...
Oh, wow.
People have been cheating at school for a long time. Now, I got a Cert 4 in computer systems or something. I don't know who gives a shit.
Good.
And I tried pretty hard for the first 6 months and was doing it. But then I worked out that the same course was being run in Mexico, which must be like 6 hours earlier or something.
Yep.
And some dude was finishing every test, because they had weekly Friday tests, and just putting the answers. And after that, all I had to do was remember the answer. And once I saw the answer pop up, so I cheated a whole degree. And people, it's not
Grant. This annoys me a little bit because I used to. He'd come home and I'd congratulate him on his good marks,
A pluses,
and you take him to Luna Park and stuff, and you know, buy him things because he was doing so well at school.
Yeah, right. He didn't tell you the understory.
Only came up the other week.
Yeah, amazing. Well, and you didn't do it when you were at university, did you?
I didn't do much when I was at university.
Well, you did a fair bit, actually. You worked very hard.
Well,
I did. And it was all your own work.
I'd love to finish it too.
Well,
anyway, let's not bog down.
You're still young. Yeah.
My academic history.
Now, one of the things about doing this, being there, component to try and address the AI issue is that my brother Stuart came with me to the States. He co-rode with me for that adventure. And we got into a fight in a bar in Colorado with a guy who said, I love the idea of Australia, but I could never live there because the government took all your guns and you're not allowed to own one. Mm-hmm. Stuart and I basically...
Possibly ill-advised.
Ill-advised, yeah. We didn't argue. We just pointed out that he was talking to two people who've just spent a combination of about 120 years in Australia, and what he was saying isn't true. There's guns all over Australia. Every farmer's got a gun. There are sporting shooter clubs. There are guns everywhere. If you've got a reason to have a gun, you can get one.
Yes.
No, he wouldn't have a bar of it because he'd read it on a National Rifle Association website. And I asked him what they'd said. He said, oh, well, it wasn't the NRA who said it. It was a comment on the Post.
Right.
So
pretty tight source.
Except he believed it.
Yeah, of course he did.
Now,
the good thing about America is it's a long way from here.
Yes. Well,
so guns, no America, Spanner-Man's a communist. We've just got rid of 80% of our potential audience. Do you want to cover Israel-Palestine while we're here? Yeah.
Should we start this again, do you think?
We haven't finished the fight yet.
Anyway, so you're having the blue with
the... Yeah, we're having the blue with the guy.
Quick story is a good story too, Grant.
Yeah, okay.
I don't want to hurt your feelings.
You know, how big is this book? It's 300 and, oh no, it's 200 pages.
You could stub your toe on it.
You could open the back door and leave it open. But so we couldn't convince him that you could own a gun or buy a gun in Australia. And the publishing company looked at the thing I'd written about this. This is injecting personality into the story and said, we'd prefer you didn't write that. We don't want to really print that because we expect it to sell well, this book in America, and they're very sensitive about gun laws.
Yes.
But
they are pretty sensitive about their guns.
The point I was making, though, was that the debate wasn't really about gun laws. It was about American concepts of truth.
Yes.
You know, how this guy with two eyewitnesses and 120 years of experience were discounted and beaten by a comment on a post online.
Well, that's what do they call that? Justification syndrome or whatever? There's a name for it. Where
confirmation bias.
Confirmation bias,
yeah. Yep.
You know, you want to hear what you want to hear. As soon as someone says what you want to hear, that's your chosen source. We all do that a little bit.
Yeah, it's human nature.
We do it a little bit, but do we do it on the scale that America's doing it at the moment?
Well, and you can't say America because of one dickhead in a bar.
You can say America. Look at Donald Trump.
Oh man, Jesus. Let's
go. No, we're not. We're not going down that path.
We are going down that path.
We've got the good podcast. We've got the best podcast.
not the orange man.
No, let's not do that.
Yeah. Well, but you get my drift.
Yeah, and I don't want to let you loose on it.
Yeah, all right, okay. He's never told a lie.
No. Now, look, the people that probably tuned into this, Grant, this may come as some news to you, probably saying, what are these two or three idiots prattling on about? This is supposed to be a motorcycling podcast. So I see you rode down on your 1150 GS today.
I did, yes.
And I can't believe for a bike that really is quite capable off-road – it's so clean and tidy. You must wash it after every hard ride.
Well, it wasn't. It wasn't before I came down. I have actually fallen over on it recently on a muddy, dirty, shitty road.
Auto-Glim products will come out at Auto-Glim, home. You've got plenty of those.
I used them.
Did you?
Yes, I sure did.
And any good?
They're great. And as you'll see, I forgot about the panniers, so the panniers are still covered in mud.
The bike looked nice and clean, actually. I'm surprised because... Yeah. You're not renowned in that area.
Can I just say something about GS BMWs?
Yes.
You know, I don't want to insult you because I know you just acquired a new one. But
you don't want to insult me.
I fell over on this road. It was just too slippery and too muddy, and
Ran out of talent.
I ran out of talent. Yeah, there's that too. But I lost the front, and I corrected, and then anyway,
I've heard those stories before.
I ended up under the bike.
Yeah. Under the bike.
Yeah. Because it fell on me. I wasn't going that fast, but
well, we know that.
After I'd managed to dig myself out, I couldn't lift the bike up. Partly because I couldn't get any footing.
It had gone past 45?
Oh,
yeah, they get bloody heavy when you pass the heads.
Yeah. And I just realised that, you know, the 1150 GS and probably every GS after that, they're not really serious off-road bikes.
I don't think they were ever supposed to be. I think the market decided that. I don't think BMW ever said these things are mad off-road bikes. They said they were capable of unpaved surfaces, of dealing with unpaved surfaces.
Yeah.
I think it's the market that decided, I want to climb trees with these things.
But you guys must have seen some of the BM promotional material
with miles.
GSs in midair and
oh, yeah, that place that can ride the wheels off.
I've got a little bit of a different opinion on this than you, Snag. I think that early on that is true, but I think that they've proven that adventure bikes can be serious off-road machines. But I think what it is riding an adventure bike off-road is a different discipline.
Well, you'd be the right bloke to talk about this because you have recently completed the BMW GS Safari.
I did the GS Safari, yeah.
So, which a big 5-day event. I think you did 2.5 days or 3 days or whatever you did.
Yeah.
But you did it on the 900.
F900 GS Enduro, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I would have been just as happy on an R1300 though. But
well, you like adventure riding.
Yeah.
And you're actually quite good at it because you've done a lot of it recently.
I've gotten better at it.
Yeah. Tell us about the Safari. What was that all about and how'd it go and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, well, I guess I've actually done a lot of off-road stuff lately. The GS Safari, so let me think. What impressed me the most is the circus of it. There was 250 riders there. Mm. 250 people to fly in, accommodate, to feed.
Yeah, it's a travelling circus that rolls into town and the town's got to deal with it.
Mind you, it's not free, is it?
No, but it's not as much money as I thought it was. I think it's like $3,800 or something, maybe less. I don't want to get that number wrong. Look it up. Yeah. But it's not ridiculous. You can do it. And I see the value in it because everything's looked after for you. Yeah. It's amazing, you know. Like a lot of people going on these big adventure rides is a really daunting thing, you know. What if something goes wrong? But you're really well looked after and you can just ride.
How difficult was the course?
I'd say intermediate. I mean, there was no single track or anything, but the pace was up there. But you can leave earlier and just kind of do your own thing. It's certainly no race. But
Spencer rode with Miles Davis.
Your first mistake.
Miles can ride the wheels off the things, and I think the pace was pretty hot, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
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 Oh, yeah, we were flying.
Yep.
Flying.
Miles can ride. There's no doubt about that. The other things that you've been doing recently, though, that's a very good podcast, not a podcast, a very good video of the comparison between the CF Moto and the Himalayan.
Yeah, that's been doing really well.
Yeah. Now, but what I want to ask you about that is you, I watched it waiting for a conclusion, which is the best bike. And, of course, in the last 20 seconds, you say, well, I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, yeah, I was disappointed that I did that cheap journalist comparison thing. But it's kind of true.
You learned it from me and Greg, so.
It might seem like I was just trying to not annoy anyone, but it's the truth. I mean, I couldn't tell you which one to buy, really.
But you can tell us, and you did tell us, that how much fun 450cc motorcycles can be off-road.
Absolutely.
And I reckon I'd have a lot more fun on a Himalayan than I would on the GS.
Oh, yeah, the stakes feel lower, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And they're lighter, they're easier to chuck around, they're more manoeuvrable. You're probably, well, I was going to say you're probably going slower, but that's not actually the case, is it? I mean, you know, for most off-road
probably
stuff.
Probably not.
you can keep up a very high speed.
Yeah, yeah.
And 450 is enough, you know.
More than enough.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the middle class adventure bikes can do some pretty crazy things. I don't know if it'd be fair to say you're going just as fast, but you're probably having just as much fun.
I think the upside with the whole thing, though, is also the accessibility of bikes like that at priced under $10,000. Mm. Well, that brings in the adventure market people that, I mean, I just bought a GS, and let me tell you, it was not cheap.
Mm.
Not cheap at all. Which excludes most people. I've had to get to 60 before I could buy one. Now you can bring in a lot of people under $10,000 into the adventure world. I think CF Moto and Royal Enfield need to be commended for that. I think it's great that they've done that.
Well, do you reckon Royal Enfield's encouraged it? I mean, do you think that that's one of the reasons the prices of bikes like this have dropped?
Definitely.
The Royal Enfield Himalayan 450 came out from 8,990 right away, and a couple of weeks later, or maybe even days later, the CF Moto 450 MT came out from 8,990 right away.
Yep. It was smart.
Yeah.
Well, it would have been more expensive, I reckon, the CF Moto.
Yeah. Are they?
If
sorry?
They're under $9,000.
They're introductory prices, and I think they're in a little bit of a war for who goes up to the...
See, that's a lot of motorcycle for that money, isn't it?
The CF Moto, it will settle at 9.5.
Yeah.
And I think so will the Himalayan.
Except and there's a fair bit of fruit on the CF Moto, isn't there?
Yeah, it's got traction control.
Yeah.
Mm.
But, I mean, with these 450 class adventure bikes, you kind of like... I get on the bike and I turn the traction control off straight away. I mean...
Off-road?
Anywhere.
Do you?
Yeah. I mean...
Jeez, I don't.
It's
just as well, Grant.
32 kilowatts or something, I mean.
Since traction control came out, I've found I'm not up trees as often as I was.
Oh, I definitely like it on the bigger things. Don't get me wrong. I'm not one of those guys that... I'm definitely no anti-traction control guy. I love good traction control. But there's good traction control and there's bad traction control.
Well, I think it depends on the surface.
Yeah, and just the way it's calibrated.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, when it came out early, it would just... the wheels slipping... Guess what? You have no power now, and that can actually get you in more trouble off-road than...
Yeah.
On the road's a different story.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I've got traction control on my GS, and I also on the TFT screen, it tells you when it's played.
If it's kicked in. But it won't
never
just...
Never once
it won't just
have I seen it.
Yeah.
Never once. The grip is so good.
Really?
Or maybe I'm so slow. I don't know, but I have never had... Because I thought, this is so good, it's imperceptible. Well, it's imperceptible because it's not bloody... I don't need it.
It's probably making decisions to preemptively avoid the slip.
Well, it shouldn't let me on the bike. It just pushes me over.
Yeah.
When I walk towards it.
I'm of the view that probably somewhere between 80 and 90% of car drivers have never engaged the anti-lock braking system on their car.
No. But the day they do is going to be handy, isn't it?
Well, I wish they'd practice because it's a shock when it first happens, when you first do it.
Thud, thud, thud.
And you feel it through your foot and you think, what's going on?
You might get off the pegs.
I did this Mercedes AMG driving academy thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the big thing was the anti-lock brakes and understanding it. And why I agree with why it's important that people should know what it feels like to engage them is 9 times out of 10, you can feel the ABS engaging, release the brake pressure a little bit and re-engage and get braking pressure back really fast.
Yes.
Yep. Whereas if you just stay planting your foot on the ground, the ABS will keep rolling through and it'll take you forever to stop.
So it's a combination of threshold braking and ABS. But you know, threshold braking is pretty good if you can do it properly.
Yes.
But well, ABS helps, certainly helps. I mean, it helps.
Yeah.
Oh, it's better than just locking the things up and going in a straight line.
Absolutely, but that's not threshold braking. But on the smaller dirt bikes, you know, we've noticed dirt bikes sort of peaked around the 1200 class of off-roaders, but now the trend is in the under 500 and under. Mm-hmm. You know,
in adventure bikes, you're talking.
Yeah, it dropped down to 800s. Everyone had 800s for a while.
Mm.
And now, you know, I'm sure Royal Enfield's selling more Himalayans now than most other manufacturers are selling their dirt bikes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, sure. No, that's not, I don't think, well, I don't know about that. But I get your point. You're kind of, your overarching point works. Off-road and road segments kind of do weird things.
Yeah.
There's a big difference between off-road and adventure too. They tend to get lopped in together. Now, anyone riding enduro bikes is not interested in a
oh, no.
So,
yeah.
I think it's just, it matters what your parameters are. But the point being that people are now buying middleweight to smaller capacity adventure bikes based around the fact that they are easier to ride and they're cheaper. Now, you bring those two parameters into any category and you're going to do all right.
Yep.
I got a theory that, you know, with big adventure bikes, think, you know, R1150 GS, R1200 GS, you know, it was sort of almost a pissing contest for who's got the most powerful thing. And then it kind of kept going up until they're like, okay, here's one with 210 horsepower.
Yes.
Yep. Everyone goes, all right.
Enough.
Yeah. Can we just get one I can ride off-road now? Yes.
Where your bike can get crushed in places like Victoria.
Yeah. It's a little bit the same, although we know that the sports bike category is on the nose. But, you know, I'm riding a BMW M1000 XR at the moment. It's got 201 horsepower, yeah. I think. It's a delightful motorcycle, but it doesn't feel any faster than my 154 normal.
154 kilowatts, I think.
You see, I've got an S1000 XR, which has got 165 horsepower. This one don't feel any faster than me.
Oh, it is.
What? But it just, warp speed is warp speed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It's just warp speed out of both
of
them.
Yep.
Yeah. When your nose is bleeding and it just looks like when the, you know, when Han Solo's ship takes off and it's all the but lights.
It might also be that
spot on.
People are finally kind of realizing that with the conditions of the roads and with the increased policing, that there's a very limited amount of time you can spend.
You're starting to become boring.
No. I'm not saying they shouldn't exist. I'm just saying that people are being more realistic about their riding.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that MT, that'd be quite a good road bike. I'm riding that GS essentially as a comfortable touring bike.
Yes. Yeah. Totally get that.
Yep. So, you know, for that purpose, it's good.
Now, but speaking on that, Grant, I see that and it's really polarized views, but BMW has brought out its 1300 GSA.
Yes. Yep.
Everyone's had their say. I think BMW did a really good job of making it a big reveal, global reveal. Like,
yep.
We used to just go down the shop and have a look at a bike, didn't we? Oh, yeah.
Yep.
There's an XS 1100. I'll have that. Now it's, you know, we've got to wait and, you know.
Well, there's an R1200C. I won't have that.
Oh, Grant, the R1200C.
Yeah, nice bike.
Oh, my God. Ooh. I would not use that to hold the back door open.
Yep, really.
The ugliest, slowest. Anyway, moving on. I don't want to get back into that.
You were talking about the 1300 GSA.
Well, I think they did really well with the marketing, but
yeah. –
What gets me, I'm reading the social media, and that's always dangerous. These people that have these finite and very strong opinions from a photograph.
Yeah, yeah.
No one's ridden one.
Yep.
You get photo of one side of it, basically. Oh, it's too ugly. It looks like it's got a vacuum cleaner. Who cares? But they've created a fantastic fizz around a bike that no one's seen yet.
Have you seen that Hitler clip where he says it looks like a...
Don't they say that Hitler will come up in a podcast in the first 10 minutes?
Yep.
No matter what?
Hitler says it looks like a cooperative venture between BMW and Tupperware, which is pretty cruel.
Well, it is pretty cruel. But look, they'll sell millions of them. And my initial reaction was, remember when you first saw a GS? The first GS you saw, the 1000, I think it was, wasn't it?
Oh.
1100.
The 800.
The first time you saw it, you went, what? That'll be nice when it's finished. What the hell is that? There's bits and bobs and cobby lumps. And then all of a sudden, BMW had created a niche. And they've got a very good habit of finding a market before most people. Now, with the 1300 GSA, they have made a big delineation between what is essentially a very usable road bike, the 1300 GS.
Yes.
And okay, if you want to be Gaston Rea, here's this world-traveling beastie.
Yep.
So they've actually made the GSs two different bikes now.
Yeah, they have. They have. You know, I'm a biased witness here in that there's the issue of the cost, obviously, but there's also the issue of the cost of repairs to it. If you actually use it the way,
if you drop it,
it's sort of intended to be used. If you fall off on it, I can't imagine.
Did you know BMW what it would cost to repair? A 5-year warranty?
Oh,
are you working for him, Spencer? What? No. I always thought he was in their pocket.
You won't break it. I mean, it'll be a good bike.
I don't know. I just don't know about speculation about reliability. I mean,
no, it's not reliability. I'm only talking about the fact that
breaking things.
Yeah, and
well, they've done pretty good at putting bars all over it, but.
There's heaps of GSs. You see GSs all over the shop. You don't see them all wreckers.
No, and I think that's largely because most GSs aren't used in a situation where they're going
to
crash.
There's some truth to that. There's definitely some truth to that.
You know, so mine's a good example. I mean, yes, I did crash it recently, but but rider error.
Tell us about. I didn't hear about that.
Oh no, this is. I just told
it wasn't mentioned in dispatches.
Oh well, look.
What happened, Grant?
I took a photo.
You spoke about it earlier, didn't you? You ran out of talent.
I ran out of, the bike.
The bike ran out of talent.
Yeah.
The great Bavarian Motorworks can't put a bike together for you.
The bike increased its weight at the least appropriate time.
Oh, damn those bloody weight transfer things.
I don't know how they do it, but suddenly it was five times heavier than it was on the road.
Boys, I just realised we have not paid respects to our dear advertiser and presenter of this podcast, Autoglym.
Autoglym.
Now, I've used Autoglym on the BM after I'd covered it in mud. And as I just said, I put the panniers on it when I was coming down here and hadn't got to them. I'd forgotten about them. So the rest of the bike is spotless and the panniers are covered in mud still. But when I get home, I'll attend to that. But I've got to say, in an unbiased position, it's a magnificent product.
It is. It's good stuff. Yep. It is good stuff. And they've stuck with us and I don't know why they do, but they do. And we should talk about it because that's good.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking about it because it's good.
It's good.
It works.
It does. I use it. I use it all the time. Yeah. But I get it for nothing. That's probably why.
Well, that could be one reason why you use it all the time.
I spray it all over the joint.
Yeah.
I use
it. I got it in the shower.
I kill flies with the bloody tyre black. Grant. It's a bit messy around the place, but it saves on.
Yeah.
Shiny, though.
Well, it is shiny as buggery. And the other the blue-ass flies are very shiny. And the other side of it is it's inflation at the moment, Grant. Have you been to the Woolies lately? I save money where I turn the gas off while I turn the bacon over now.
Yeah.
You've got to watch, you know, watch the pounds and the pennies will look after themselves. Watch the pennies and the pounds will look after themselves, Grant.
Yeah, you sound like you were born during the Depression.
I was a bit.
Bela Lugosi.
Yeah, Bela Lugosi from the Depression. That sounds like a punk band.
So how is your brand new R1300 GS?
Oh, struggling on the. I am struggling on the 1300 GS. One of the blind spot assist things is not bright enough. Like that to be brighter. But
BMW, back to the drawing board.
Back to the drawing board. Well, I love it. I think it's great. The only thing is I'm trying to sell my S1000XR. If anyone wants a good S1000XR,
is that still for sale?
Yeah. Well, the used bike market is flooded right now. Absolutely flooded.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I know why that is. But during COVID, the government gave us all money. So we discretionary purchased. You couldn't get a bike for love nor money.
Actually, yeah, that's true.
And the inventory on a place like Bike Sales, a worthy competitor of ours, well, a competitor is. They
damned with faint praise.
So their inventory has tripled
recently.
Recently,
yep.
Now, so what's happened is that the Kitchen Senate has decided that discretionary purchase of that motorbike that sits in the shed that you bought during COVID could probably buy a new lounge suite or actually pay for our Safeways next week,
or the school fees for the kids.
School fees for the kids. It's the same with tinnies, camper vans, four-wheel drives.
Really?
All those discretionary jet skis, which are the most ridiculous thing I ever invented.
Yep.
They're all going, and in all those markets are chock-a-block. Now, I've got my, you know, it sounds like I'm flogging it, but in all honesty, it's giveaway price, and I haven't had a call. So that's
just
where the
market is. Are you serious? Not one call?
Not one. It's a third of new price.
And relative to what everybody else is asking for them, it's at the cheaper end.
It's much cheaper and it's better appointed.
Yeah.
So, look, who cares? You don't want to buy my motorbike. I don't care. I'll be happy to keep it. But I'm not selling it any cheaper. I just can't do it.
Have you still got the ute?
No, I don't want to talk about
it. Not the ute.
Well, I was a bit interested.
What do you want to know? I purchased a Longreach, XH Longreach ute.
Great car.
Which I didn't realise had some of the worst fittings that were ever fitted to a car. Because the XH was built, Grant, because the AU didn't have a ute, so they tacked an EA or EB front on I can't remember, X, whatever. I did know.
I've got one. I've got an XH.
Did the door shut?
No.
No, the doors don't shut on any of them.
It breaks, the locking mechanism and the angle mechanism break.
Yeah, do they, Grant?
Yeah, they need to be welded.
I bought the last four in the world.
Oh, good. Yeah. Have you still got them?
Yeah, but they broke.
Yeah, oh, great.
Anyway, I'd rather move on. I bought a ute thinking I'd absolutely stolen it.
Yep.
But the bloke I bought it off, I can't find him anymore.
No.
I took it to get the roadworthy done, Grant. I thought, this will be easy.
Oh.
26 points it missed on.
Yeah.
Most of them catastrophic.
Yes.
So I sold it to a bloke. He's using it on his farm.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah. He's using it on his farm. Anyway, no interest in the ute.
But you did manage to assemble the coin necessary to buy a 1300.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I allow myself a good motorbike. It's my one luxury in life. And I allow myself that.
You know that the...
To be fair, I had to convince him to get it. He was really feeling bad about doing it.
Spending the money, yep.
I mean...
I felt spoiled.
The reason why I reckon it's absolutely all right, one, because it's your money, who gives a shit, but also because you ride. I don't know anyone else who does as many Ks as you do. You are always riding.
And yeah, I do like to ride.
You deserve to be on a good motorcycle when you're as committed as you are. I mean, it's pretty much your life.
Yeah, I ride all the time.
Yeah,
I ride all the time.
I don't want to ride on your bike because it's something like 60 kilograms lighter than the 1150 GS.
Yeah.
And I reckon you'd be able to feel that. It must feel like a really nice bike to...
It's lovely. Really good, really good. It's great. And I've got it set up the way I like it. And gone are the days of me riding around white-knuckled. I ride around and look around now and just go places, and this thing goes everywhere I want in comfort. Heated seat, Grant. Oof. My Tush has never been so comfy.
Oh.
But, yeah, very happy with that. Now, speaking of travel.
Yes.
Young Spence over there. Well, he's not young Spence anymore. He's how old are you? 28 this year. I told him the other day he's actually, just to put him at rest, I said, you're now closer to 35 than 20. Which actually, he had to sit down when he thought about that.
Oh, yeah. Kind of rocked me, actually.
You always described him as a late adopter of maturity.
Yes, well.
Have you changed your view?
Well, Spence lives by the theory, you're only young once, but you can always be mature.
Yeah, well, true. Yes. Yeah.
But anyway, Spencer went to Tibet, of all places, on a grueling long-distance ride from Nepal to Lhasa and return. Tell us about that, Spence.
Oh, man, what a thing.
Firstly, just before you start, tell me how you managed to get into Tibet, which is disputed territory owned by China.
You should have seen the document. It must have been half an inch thick with, you know, symbols and QR codes I mean I couldn't have done it on my own. It was with a tour, you know. Royal Enfield runs these tours for select people to these really remote places.
So it wasn't a launch?
No, it wasn't a launch.
It was a ride. Okay.
It was a ride. Okay. Yeah.
Go on. Sorry I interrupted.
Well, I was on that GS Safari actually, and I got the email, hey, there's a spot opened up, do you want to do this? And I was obviously like 2 weeks. That's really hard to justify being out of the office for 2 weeks for one story. And I was on the JS Safari, but I was like, when is anyone going to say, do you want to go to Tibet? You know,
never.
When do you ever hear of anyone going to Tibet?
I didn't even know you could do it.
No. So I was just like, okay. And got on the plane and arrived there, and I pretty much had no idea like what I was in for. It was a really challenging thing. So I landed in Kathmandu, sort of crazy place.
Nice town, yep.
Yeah, you've been there.
Been there, done that. My picture's probably still in the post office there.
It probably is.
Yep.
And we set about heading to the Tibetan border, which is a Chinese border. Here's the thing. I'm skipping around a bit here. Tibet, you may as well just call it China or North Korea light. It is a serious, it's a police state. It is a very hostile place for someone to go as a tourist. The border experience was nothing like nothing I've ever been through. They would go through everything you own with a fine tooth comb.
Sorry, you're talking about Nepal or
Nepal into Tibet?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay,
but it's a Chinese border, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, when we finally did get across, you know, there's spies everywhere trying to people taking photos of
keep
you.
An eye.
You know, you really got to be on your best behavior. It's not a joke, you know. It's not like some countries where, you know, the police might be a bit corrupt, but they'll, you know, you can pay them off or something. This is a place where you really, really got to watch what you say. And that was actually one of the real difficulties of it, is going 2 weeks where you know that everything on your phone is monitored. Every text message you send, no matter how encrypted it is, it's scanned. Or everything you do is public and they know you're there. They know you're in town. There'd be days where I'd hand my passport to a military guy 20 times. You know, I'm like, you must know we're coming.
And would he take his time? Like, you wouldn't instantly...
Sometimes not. Thankfully, we had guides and that managed all this for me. I really didn't have to worry about it that much.
But it was a lot of hurry up and wait, wasn't there?
Yeah, it was a lot of passport control. But
so what was seen as being the benefit of going there in the first place? I mean, Nepal's interesting enough by itself.
Well, I thought it was like, you know, one of these cultural epicenters, you know, like a spiritual holy ground, you know, the same way think of, I don't know, what's another example?
Bhutan.
Oh, Bhutan. Yeah, similar like that. But I mean, it's so oppressed by the Chinese government that, you know, let me give you an example. You go to one of the many beautiful Tibetan temples, and Grant, I'm sure you're very aware of the history of Tibet.
He's been there, haven't you? Yeah.
No, I've been to the border, but it's been closed because of the Chinese takeover most of my adult life.
But so, like, when you go in there,
this is the temple.
A temple.
Yep.
Pick one.
Yep.
Oh, the Chinese prince. You know, there's no talk of any actual Tibetan people. It's wiped out. You don't talk about the Dalai Lama. You don't mention the war. It's very, very hostile to the Tibetan people. And you get the feeling like, you know, the Tibetan people really just didn't look at me. But I don't think it was, I don't think it's a reflection at all of their character. I think they're sort of living in fear.
It's just safer not to.
It's safer not to, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But positively, the riding.
I've just got out of the way wouldn't even say it's a negative because it's a learning experience.
Well, you've got to talk about getting sick as well, altitude sickness.
Yeah. But I mean, I was sort of paired up with this guy, Jasper Campbell, known as the Scrambler of London. He's got a big platform on Instagram, good bloke. And this woman, Maral, who's an Iranian woman who escaped it and ridden over 65 countries solo. A really inspirational, amazing woman. And I basically didn't know about how serious altitude is. You know, I was on a tour. I thought, look, we're going up high altitude, but they're not going to take me anywhere that's going to kill me, are they?
No, because if there's other people there, you know, if they can breathe, I can breathe. Yeah.
So we're at 18,000 feet at some lake and I'm doing burnouts and jumps and stuff like that and getting a bit short of breath. And we ride up the hill a bit and I go, there's Mount Everest. And I go, where? And they go, just there.
Yep.
I go, that's it.
Next.
I was like, that's what we've been talking about all these years. That little fucking rock.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was probably a lot further away than you thought.
No, it turns out we'd 3/4 of the way up the thing.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
You're looking at it from halfway.
Anyway, I'm like, oh, yeah, whatever. Anyway, have another. All you eat is yak, by the way. The food is like the malnutrition. Like, I don't know how anyone stands. But the food is like, you can barely face it. It's yak meat. It's flavorless. It's cooked on a turd. And anyway, so.
Because there's no wood.
I wake up in this town, right?
No.
I wake up in this town. I've literally got Mount Everest out my window. It's like the only thing you can see. And my head is ringing. Ringing. And I go, what is this? And I sort of get up just sweating like everything. I'm like, I go and throwing up. Okay, put one pant leg on, throw up, put another pant leg on. And I've
with a pounding head.
With a ringing head. It's 6 o'clock in the morning. It's about 2 degrees. And I've got 400 kilometers to do and 2 mountain passes.
Oh.
And there's no staying home.
It's almost like the riding home from Macedon with a hangover.
It would be. It was like just getting on a bike with the worst ever hangover. It's basically what it is.
You'd rather shoot yourself.
But you're more worried though. And
And
the thing is, I couldn't just say like, I'll do my own thing and meet you somewhere, because the visa is only as a group. As soon as I'm alone, no one speaks English. They want to put me in jail.
Yes.
So it's correct. Like, I got to get on this bike. And so it was basically 4 days of like
horror,
mind over matter, you know, it's all right, you know, like just riding with a migraine.
Oh God, sounds awful.
Oh, I don't want to be too whingy about it, you know, cause people have done way crazier stuff. They're doing crazier stuff now, but just, it was really hard to just go like, cause I did take the stance after the first couple of days. I went, you know what, if I keep feeling this, it's going to break me and I'm going to hate it. And I'm just going to be, all I'm going to be thinking about for the next week is getting home. And I didn't want to do that. I'm never going to be out there again. I'm on a motorcycle with great people. This is a trip of a lifetime.
And it's a good way to, it's admirable approach.
I figured, I remember messaging you and I said, nah, that's it.
I'm doing this.
I'm just going to do this and I'm going to get every bit of fun out of it I could.
And you did, didn't it? Did pick up.
I did pick up. I started just laughing at things going wrong. Like, I dislocated my shoulder.
Mm-hmm. Non-specific urethritis or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I went to a Tibetan hospital.
Oh.
That, I can't believe I missed this whole thing. So I'm so crook and I notice I'm pissing blood and I go, oh, cool.
That's always a good one, isn't it?
Of course I'm pissing blood.
Yeah.
This is when I started to just see the funny side. I'm like, oh, here we go. You know, what else? Have some yak. And I go, you know what? Like, I'm actually feeling pretty fucked here. Like, because like, I'd like crank the heater up, but I'd still be like freezing, shivering and stuff.
Yep.
Pissing blood.
Pretty spooky when you get crooked a long way from home.
Pissing blood. You go to the.
There's nowhere further from home than Tibet.
No.
I go into the reception. I'm like, hey, do you have my laundry? They lost it. So I'm like, okay, no socks and jocks for the next week. And I'm like, halo, laundry, and just like 10 Chinese women would laugh. And I'm like, yeah, okay, funny, I'm a stupid Australian, but can I get my laundry, you know?
Yeah,
they sort of just wander off laughing. And I'm just like, okay. And anyway, I'm like, yeah, I guess I better fucking see someone with this. And so they're like, yeah, you know, you shouldn't be pissing that much blood.
A little bit of pissing blood's all right.
Yes. Yeah, a little
How much should I be pissing?
Anyway. We go to the hospital. How do you reckon a Tibetan hospital?
Oh, plush.
So, like, the guy walk up to the kind of reception desk, like a bank teller kind of setup, and he grabs my arm and pulls it in, and he takes my blood without wearing gloves.
Yep.
Then.
And he probably didn't open a new needle. It was just the hospital needle for taking blood.
No, Betadine, you know.
Yep.
And then they go, sorry to get graphic, but. They get a tube for a piss test or whatever.
Oh,
like,
no.
I was like, all right, God. I'll go have a piss.
Stop.
I went into the Dunnies. It looked like a train spotting.
Oh, jeez. Yep. So I'm out. The chopper and me out
anyway,
at this point.
So I speak to him and they go, oh, no, you're all right. You know, just.
Yeah.
This is a funny thing. They said, here's some tablets. Don't take them.
These will kill you.
They said, don't take them.
Right.
And
I can't really see what the point for that would be. But
anyway, This takes me back to Morale, this woman I was riding with who really...
She was great, wasn't she?
She was great. She's ridden 65 countries alone, grew up in Iran. You know, I don't even know what that's... You talk about oppression, you know.
Yeah.
And she goes, man, I'm worried about you. You're pale. Do you have your test results? And I said, yeah. And she sent it to a German doctor she knew. And I was like, thanks. And then anyway, an hour later, I get a bang on the door and she goes, Spencer, you are really sick. You have a really bad infection.
Yep.
And she managed to source me antibiotics and...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What a great woman.
Totally looked after me.
If she ever comes out here, we must put her up. Oh,
she's forever asking me to come over to... She lives in Delhi.
And she kind of gave you a bit of love when you were sick, yeah?
Head massages, checking on me.
And it counts so much when you're sick, just someone caring.
Mega woman, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, credit I'm sitting here whinging and she's done... She's, you know... She, was in Africa on her solo journey and she had a baby in Africa. Well, she was carrying a baby in Africa.
Yep.
You know, on her own. Oof. She's got a book coming out called A Bump on the Road for that reason.
Well, so okay. Well, there's a plug for that.
Must talk about that.
Well, it'll be a better book than mine probably.
Oh, without question.
I've never had a baby in Africa while I've been...
Well, not that you know of.
Not that I know of.
Yeah.
Good point, yes.
Anyway, long story short, I kept riding. I got a bit better throughout the thing and got back to Kathmandu and, oh, my God, did I appreciate the low altitude, a nice meal, you know. When I first landed in Kathmandu, I was like, I'm in Mars. When I came back to Kathmandu, I was like, civilization.
Yeah.
It's amazing how you change, isn't it?
Yeah.
They do good cakes in Kathmandu. Are they still doing that?
I didn't see any cakes, but I mean, it just
you, probably hash
whatever,
cakes when
whatever
you were there.
Whatever meal you get, it when in Tibet, it would arrive and I'd have to hold my nose and picture a steak just to get it down, you know. It's that bad.
Yakety yak.
Yakety yak.
Well,
what's in my school bag?
I'm not lining up for that next time. But as I said to Spence, and I'm sure he's aware, these are the things. The adversity becomes the story. And as time goes by, you know, if you had gone over there and done, you know, 5-star comfort, you would have been protected from the real trip.
Absolutely.
And you weren't protected from... You lived the life.
Well, I mean, I probably was. It probably was so much worse.
Hey, Spence, pick between 5-star accommodation while you were there and being sick and...
Sorry?
Pick between 5-star accommodation.
I'll go the 5-star accommodation. Yeah,
I thought you probably would.
Oh, yeah. No, I was laying there throwing up and going, oh, this is good. This is character
doesn't
building.
Get better
this,
than this. This
will be great for when I'm doing a podcast.
Well, you're going to Barcelona. going to Barcelona next week. One of the world's great cities, although it, you know, they're not too happy with tourists. So don't try and blend in a bit.
Yeah.
Hey, just before we get on to Barcelona, I've got a theory about your laundry. I got a feeling that when they opened the bag and looked at it and your underwear was covered in blood and vomit.
Mustard gas.
That they took it out and buried it and pretended it never arrived. Yeah,
it wouldn't have been good, would it?
Very possibly.
Possible. Sorry, yes. We were getting on to Barcelona. No, Barcelona?
Barcelona.
Barcelona.
I'll wrap up the Tibet thing, though. Oh.
Yes, please
I've
do.
I've got an hour-long spectacular feature film from it to put together. I smuggled things back.
Infomoto.com.au, yeah. That'll be there, and YouTube, of course.
I'll give you all the goss.
Looking forward to that.
And I do want to say, like, you know, I've said some negative things about the whole thing because I was sick and it was challenging, but ultimately I was with some fantastic people. My hosts put together a ride that you really just could not do.
Royal Enfield people were really good, weren't they?
They gave me an opportunity of a lifetime.
Yeah, absolutely they did.
And so, you know, like, I'm really grateful and I'm so glad I did it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was just hard work.
Yeah, yeah. It was very frightening to be back here and sending messages to Spencer and he said, I said, how are you? He said, I don't want to tell you.
Yeah.
Because it'll up for worry you. And so I said, come on. And he goes, I just pissed in blood. And I was looking for flights. You know, your kid's sick.
Yes.
Which you get a little irrational.
Yeah.
You just come in here and then get altitude sickness.
Yeah, I'm going to be a big fucking help.
Fist and blood next to me.
Yeah, no good. Yeah. But
So is this Spain trip, is it for the...
It's just a bike launch.
Yeah, but it's for the kind of...
The thug, what's it called? The
Gorilla 450. Gorilla. It's
so the 411 Himalayan had a road going version of it.
The Scram.
The Scram. Is it the same relationship, say the 450?
I think more or less. I think the Gorilla 450 might have cast wheels rather than Y spoke, but I'm not sure. I'm actually under embargo with this, so I can't really.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I can tell you what it that is. Much? Yeah. Well, I just did, so.
Yeah, we could be in trouble.
It's all right.
Getting Guy Martin to promote it was a pretty,
yeah,
pretty good move.
That, yeah,
it?
The burnout. I saw that. Oh, yeah, wow, that was cool.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, Guy Martin's doing video for them, and you know, for a cost, I'm sure. But he's a
big name.
Oh, what a good advocate!
He's a big
anything.
Name, yeah.
Yeah, you and him will end up being good mates,
love
I reckon.
To meet Guy Martin. Oh, he's a hero.
I think if Guy Martin tells you something, you believe it.
Yeah,
he's just he wouldn't know how to tell a lie.
No, never told one in his life.
And hard as nails.
Oh, forget about it.
You know, the other I was on this CF Moto 450 MT launch. You know Ben Grabham, Grabo. He's a Dakar Fink racer legend, and I actually crashed that CF Moto, you know, and I was kind of limping around.
Well, we saw it on video.
Yeah. Leaked. And I was looking at Grabo's hand when he was like taking off his glove and it was just purple. Ugh. And I go, what's going on with your hand, Grabo? And he shows me a photo. The thing snapped clean in half 1 week ago at Fink. And he's there riding like a 3-day adventure off-road trip without saying anything about it.
A finger or a hand?
His pinky finger.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But snapped in half. Yes. His whole hand was like a
bullet. That's going to hurt.
Yeah.
I just, it made, like, it sort of reminded me with the Guy Martin thing. Like, he wasn't mentioning it. He didn't care about his broken finger.
You just noticed.
But I just happened to notice. And, like, that's with these racer guys, how fucking hard they are.
They're different.
They're built different. I saw that and I go, you know what? That's why you do what you do.
Yes.
Because that thing would be stinging. Mm. We're on Mount Buller. It was 1 degrees. You know, it's ice, everything. Waking up, putting that glove on. Oh.
Yeah.
And he didn't care.
Yeah, they are built differently.
He probably did care.
Oh, not really, though. I don't think he really did.
Well, if they do care, they let put it this way, they're not whinging.
He goes, oh, I just don't think about it.
Yeah.
I just don't think about it.
Yeah.
Greg, I'd be thinking about it.
I was built like that, Grant.
No, you're not. You're part of my school, which is no pain.
Very
no
tough.
Pain.
Well, I can remember going for a ride with Robbie Phillips. We've spoken about this before. Yeah. And I broke my thumb on the first day dirt riding. And I got out of bed the following morning and I said, I'm not coming today. And I can remember that, oh, geez, it hurt. It really hurt.
Yeah.
Like a broken thumb hurts.
Yes.
And pounds and throbs and won't let you go. And I'm thinking Grabo's with that. I don't think it's his first broken bone.
Oh, no, not even probably this month. Like,
so I think I'm a pretty tough guy, Grant. You know that.
Yeah.
I do get a bit upset if I can't get a good vanilla slice.
Yes.
In Toorak Road on a Saturday. But
no,
those people are made hard.
Robbie Phillips was pretty hard.
Oh, remember that bruise?
Jesus Christ.
Robbie. Snag, remember that bruise?
I do remember that bruise. Spence, tell that story.
Oh, you tell it, because you were there.
We were at Phillip Island. He's riding around on his old nail, actually Australian Superbike Champion bike, which is actually quite a competitive bike in post-classic racing.
Yeah.
And anyway, he's thrown that down the road at warp speed at Phillip Island, and we happen to wander down, and he's always happy to see you.
Yeah.
Snaggy.
They give him the shit little paddocks too.
Down the back there, you know. So I said, where are you going? He said, oh, I fell off yesterday. So now you know how long it takes a bruise to come in, normally a week. Well, he lifts up his shirt, Grant.
It's and purple.
It was more bruised than Phyllis.
It was vermilion. It was like, and it's talking to you. It's moving.
It's a hospital. It's a clear-cut hospital job.
I said, oh, that'd be stinging. When he says, it's not the best. So then he goes out and qualifies and puts it on a, you know, about third spot. You know, he goes, I could have done better. He is an Iron Man.
Oh, yep. Man.
Absolute Iron. They were built different, those guys.
Yeah. They're still out there, though.
They're still out there.
That Grabo story kind of...
You wouldn't arm wrestle one of them.
It reminds me that, you know, those men have not gone away.
No, and viva that.
Yeah.
And women. There's women races that are tough as nails.
Yeah, of course.
And it's reflected a bit with the MotoGP people. They recover and come back from injuries really quickly.
Well, Grant, I did a high side, one high side in my life. One on a racetrack.
It was a pretty spectacular.
It was a reasonable
event.
Flying W.
Yes.
11 broken bones later, you know, and a punctured lung. Yep. These blokes do it three times on a weekend.
I think, though, like, you know, they're so desperately fit too, which plays a big part in the recovery.
They know how to fall.
Yeah.
High sides are a thing of the past a bit too.
Oh, they still don't know about that. Marquez just threw himself down the road.
Well, ask Marquez. he'd disagree with you.
Understood. Yeah. But they do happen, but nowhere near like they used to.
I guess so. I guess what's
it's all rear end front end losers now. But yeah, I'm not trying to buy anyway. belittle those guys. I mean, I'm not one of these bootlaces. Mm. Having said that, and also those, I think the airbag leathers have had to have made a big difference.
Yeah. I just learned that they can go off twice.
I heard that on the weekend too.
Yeah, yeah.
So in the initial crash, when you hit the road, they activate.
Yeah, and then it slowly, it might take a lap or so to let the air out again. And there's like two O2 canisters in there.
Oh,
so
okay.
Because now they say you might crash and jump back on the bike. Like, they've built that into the thing.
Yeah. And then there might be regulatory problems you get into with crashing without an airbag. So I guess they need two of them. I don't know what happens if you crash twice. Maybe you'd have to DQ. I don't know.
God, it wouldn't stop them. They'd just ride around in the thing inflated.
Yeah.
They wouldn't stop. I reckon the main reason that injuries are less is that the tracks are so well designed now that they kind of get it when if there's a sharp corner, they know where the bike's going to lose traction. There's a big gravel sand runoff. It's highly unlikely that you'll ever get to the fence.
Yes.
So, and you're not going to hit anything.
Mm.
It still takes some nuts to get tossed off a motorbike.
Oh, well, absolutely, yeah. But it's not like the Isle of Man.
No.
No.
Where you might hit a house.
Well, if they raced MotoGP at the Isle of Man, we'd kill someone every weekend, wouldn't we?
Oh, absolutely.
That'd be good, though.
Do you think that'll be...
I'm not sure. Not the death part.
Not the death part, but yeah. I'd go to the racing.
Yeah.
They wouldn't do it.
No.
That's why it stopped.
Remember, Barry Sheen was very vociferous about it, not being any good over there, and Rossi and other people have said it's ridiculous.
It's actually sort of surprised me, you know, with TT, like it's a bit of a delicate subject because if you talk about, you know, the dangers of it, you get people really defensive, like, oh, but it's important and it's traditional, and which it is.
Yes.
But it's not a one-sided argument, you know.
No.
But it struck me that a lot of the circuit races I know are anti.
Yes.
You would think all races would be proponents.
Many of them are anti-riding on the road.
Yeah, that's true.
Let alone TT. They go, you're a madman riding on the road.
That's true. Yeah.
And that's the thing about circuits, that they're designed now so that if you do crash, you don't hit anything.
You've got as good a chance.
You've got a fairly good chance of living.
Yeah. And you might slap down on the road, but you're not going to die.
Correct.
Unless you get run over.
And that's the danger.
That's the danger.
You know, you're best crashing in a corner.
Mm.
So that you actually leave the circuit.
Slide off the road.
Just through centrifugal force.
And a lot these guys are like 5'6" and, you know. Yeah.
Weigh 40 kilos.
Yeah, and they're as fit as alley balls.
Correct, yeah. And which they have to be. I mean, I get tired watching the race.
The arm pump alone would be impossible,
yeah.
I would have thought. And I do 5 laps at Phillip Island. I am done for the day. I'm knackered.
Yep.
And my legs are wobbly like jelly. And I'm doing, you know, 158s.
Yep.
You know, I'm 25 seconds slower than these guys.
Yeah. And the ridiculous thing about having a sprint race, which is it's not a sprint for starters, you know, it's what, you know, it's longer than most races used to be anyway.
Yes.
And then they back up and do the full circuit.
Yeah, they're freaks.
You know, I feel like you after two or three laps of really trying, I'm exhausted.
Had the gong.
Yeah, and these guys just keep going lap after lap.
MX blokes even more. I don't know how they do that. I do one lap of an MX track. I'm going to go to bed for a week.
Yeah.
Well, seriously, it's so hard. Spence, you've ridden MX. Actually, that's a good point. You rode the new Triumph on the MX track.
I did. And I mirror your thoughts precisely. I was doing one lap stopping. 10 minutes later, I'll do another lap. These ruts.
Yeah, ruts.
These ruts.
It's a stupid word and it's a stupid thing, a rut.
Oh. How good is Triumph, though, you know, since its resurrection? In it, the courage it's taken to...
Private company.
Yeah, but to say, Family-owned company. There's a market for a bike in this category, but if we're going to sell any, it has to be the best. So they start they start from scratch.
Yeah, the best in the world. It's something they've been doing for 50 years or 60 years. Incredible.
Yeah.
They're competitive.
Amazing company.
Well, we don't know yet.
Well, Spencer, you've done the video at infomoto.com.au riding that Triumph. What are they called, mate?
TF250X.
TF250X. And Spencer does ride reasonably at MX. He talks himself down a little bit.
Yeah, well, thank you. But
well, you know, far better than me.
I could get around the
track.
That
doesn't mean you're
great. I could get around
it. Yeah. The point is, yeah, I think you're right, Grant. Like, for them to come out and say, okay, I thought they would use it maybe a proprietary engine or proprietary parts somewhere. Maybe they'd make an engine and use proprietary parts. No, they've built every bloody thing.
Yeah, I've read quite a few reviews from the launch, and competent people say it's race winning,
race ready,
straight out of the box.
Seems to be.
And didn't they keep it quiet well? Because when I first heard about it,
yeah, well, you wouldn't have believed it.
I just said bullshit. You'll never do that.
I got to dig out when I first heard the rumor of it. I made a render of the.
What the bike might look like.
It looks exactly the fucking same. I just want to say it now because I want someone – I didn't want to mention it. I want someone to dig it up. It looks exactly the same.
You'd expect the styling to reflect the market. You know,
thanks, Groff.
All those you would. Thanks, all Groff. All these GSs, you know, with the beak. Like all
oh, they'll have a beak on there. Yeah,
all big trouble is going to have a beak, you know. So it's a no-brainer to put a beak on it because it's going to be there.
No, I admire Triumph for that. I think, you know, I just couldn't believe it. And to keep it quiet.
Yeah.
Like, you've only got to have one of the Edgars that work in the paint shop with a wild woodbine hanging out of his mouth tell the next-door neighbour, oh, we're building a dirt bike up there, and it's gone, isn't it? There's your story gone. Well, they managed to keep it under wraps.
Yeah. Yeah, they managed it, though.
Well, it's clever.
They teased a few things. Yeah. I mean, people
it's hard
knew,
to keep a secret, mate.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
Anyone that reckons they can keep a secret has never tried to organise a footy club pie night.
Just before you all think that Triumph is sponsoring this particular segment.
They are.
There was the TT500, wasn't there?
600.
TT600, yep. Anything you'd like to say about that?
No, not the launch, but, well, there's a good story there. I think I've told it before.
Go on.
I don't want to tell people.
Yeah, but, no, I love it.
Oh, well, they took us up to the station resort at Jindabyne. And the TT600 had its a difficult birth. Basically, it was slow and didn't handle. And they tried to take on the Japanese at super sport level. So what an ambitious move to take on Kawasaki, Suzuki, Yamaha and Honda at making four-cylinder across the frame 600s after they'd been winning world titles with theirs for years. Anyway, long story short, it pissed down rain. So what me and another journo did thought, well, we may as well have a drink. So we had a drink and it just kept raining and raining and raining. So we were in the bar from about 9 o'clock in the morning till about 3 o'clock the next morning, and they'd flown out the latest download and the POMs to put it in, and me and this bloke were going to be the first two blokes in the world to ride it, in the world. So the world's what I had a head. I reckon I ate 47 Nurofen, so I roll out the door about 10 o'clock. I reckon I would have blown about 0.3, just hiccuping and nearly being sick. And there's the world's top
the newest version
English technicians fussing around the motorcycle, and me and this other bloke get on there. So we get on and go for a ride, and we got about 400 metres up there. I said, mate, let's just have a rest. So we pulled into the signing. I said, how long do you reckon we ought to wait? So they're waiting with bated breath. I can hear choppers and the paparazzi are waiting for our return. So I think I might have had a chuck and a piss. we did ride them for a little while, and it wasn't any better. So we stopped a bit further up the hill at, I don't know, Charlotte's Pass or something. I said, mate, I said, Rod, oh, I've let out the bag, whoever the other bloke was. I said, Rod Chapman, I said, what are we going to say? I said, they're going to pick, I mean, our integrity's shot here. And he's probably had a chuck and gone, well, let's just get back there. And it was no better. The bike was no better. So we ride back in. I think they noticed that there was a bit of pineapple on my... So they said, what do you think? And I said, look, I need more time.
Yep.
I'd like to have more time before we evaluate it. But I said, well, it's certainly no worse. And we went back in the bar because it started pissing down rain again. So that was Triumph's great world exclusive that Rod and I happened to completely...
You don't want to look behind the curtains.
We fucked, but the bike was a shitter.
It was amazing. I mean, you know, we had plenty of experience with 600s at that stage, didn't we, in the magazine world?
Yes.
Because everyone was making them, and they were really good
really
bikes.
Really good. And there was a very strong racing fraternity of super sport bikes.
Absolutely.
All four of the Japanese majors.
Yep. So the first time I rode the TT 600 was we had a magazine ride out to Narracourt, I think.
Yes.
We took a bunch of bikes, but I was really looking forward.
Year 2000 or 2001, something like that.
Yeah. I was really looking forward to having a ride on this Triumph.
That's right.
And
I went on that ride.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a story about you from that ride. No, we won't dwell on that.
She never found me.
But the thing that was astounding was that you'd open the throttle and the revs would climb, and you'd be waiting for what happened in every other bike in that category, is that you'd get to a sweet spot where the horsepower would kick in.
That's
and
right.
The bike would leap forward. That's this bike,
precisely
I don't
right.
know, I think it revved to 14,000 or something. It would just go slowly up to 14,000. Oh. Nothing would happen.
There was no...
You'd change gear.
No build do the same thing. Power.
Yeah.
And all it did was get louder.
It got louder, yeah.
You knew you weren't going any faster, it was just getting louder.
Yeah.
It was so boring.
It didn't work.
It was making about 20 less horsepower than the worst of the others. And it wasn't particularly great at handling. It looked like pretty ordinary.
Wasn't a good handler. And the only way you could keep up, really, was to try and keep corner speed. Which was quite dangerous.
Yes, the only way you could keep up was to drop it at a Yamaha dealer and pick up an R6. That was the only way.
Enough of our Triumph sponsorship.
Well, no, the Triumph make good motorcycles. Now, they've had their duds. And everyone has their duds.
They're full of courage.
I mean, I've done a bad podcast before.
The man who never made a mistake never made anything.
Thank you, Spencer. That's very true. Yep. I'll take that to the bank.
Yep.
Well, listen, I've just about had enough of this. Have you?
You reckon?
Yeah, you probably keep going.
Well, we've done one podcast
in
the last year. So.
I need a piss.
Okay. Well, I better get my jingle going.
Here we go.
Here we go.
You ready?
Thanks for joining us in the Infomoto studio for the podcast presented by AutoGlim.